Sportsnet 650's Canuck Central is presented by your local Grip Auto and Tire location. Friendly service and expert advice are waiting for you at gripauto.ca today. The Canucks coming up short against the Florida Panthers and Tampa Bay Lightning through the first two games of this five-game roadie, and now they get Carolina. Corey Lavalette's going to join us in a couple of moments, and Washington on Sunday. Bruce Boudreau confirming today that each of his goaltenders will get an opportunity to play this weekend, which shouldn't be much of a surprise, Sat.
No, and, you know, as far as the goaltending has gone for the Canucks this season, they need to rely on both goalies, right? And with the way the schedule's gone and the way Halak's played this year, I mean, do you not want to throw him out there at least, you know, to give Demko a bit of a breather here and there? I mean, the only issue is the contract thing and the bonuses and all that sort of stuff. But even that, to me, that all seems like a bit of a... It just seems unrealistic. I think you got to play Halak while you have him. And why not do it at least once on a back-to-back?
He's played so well this year, too, you know? So, I mean... There's no way he doesn't play for the rest. Like, you know, he doesn't meet those appearances by the end of the year. And I don't really know of the scenario where he waives his no move clause to get traded at the deadline. Is it possible? I'm sure it is. But you don't know that right now. And it's still a lot that would have to happen. And even by then, like by the time the trade deadline comes around, I would imagine Halak has already hit those bonuses, especially with the way the schedule is going to look over the next few weeks once we have it all ironed out and all those makeup games come around for the Vancouver Canucks. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, Canucks Central. Let's bring in our next guest, Hurricanes writer for North State Journal. It's Corey Lavalette. Thanks for this, Corey. How are you?
Hey, guys. How are you? Good evening.
We're pretty good. The Canucks are going through the southeast right now of the U.S., and it's pretty much murderer's row right now, and the Hurricanes are top of the heap in the NHL standings. It's just all clicking for Rod Brind'Amour this year, isn't it?
This year, yes, but I think the Canucks might be seeing an angry team tomorrow afternoon after the performance last night against Columbus. So it's been obviously an excellent season for the Hurricanes, but last night was the first real stinker of the year, I'd say.
Well, and as far as how this team responds to those types of things, would you expect the Carolina Hurricanes to come out against the Vancouver Canucks to play one of the best games they played all season?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's not a whole lot of giving up on this roster. It's always determined. It's kind of taken on the image of their coach, and we all know what Rod was like as a player, and that's what the team plays like. They're determined and they're always going, and you know that's what made last night so surprising was I heard you mentioning about all the games that need to be made up, and the Hurricanes have had the problems with games getting postponed, and they've been stopped and started so many times that they've had a really hard time getting in a rhythm the last month, and it kind of all manifested, I think, last night. For as rare as one bad game has been, I can't think of, in the Rod Brind'Amour era, really two games where they played poorly, and so I would imagine tomorrow will be a much, much better performance.
Carolina right now, second in points percentage in the Eastern Conference, only behind Florida after their loss last night, 6-0 to the Columbus Blue Jackets. You don't see that often from Carolina, but this team, you know, they've been building it over the last couple of years. We knew they were going to be strong again this year, but is there something that you've seen they've taken a step in? Is there a player that is showing you that the Carolina Hurricanes are, more cup contender than just, you know, Eastern Conference playoff contender this year?
I mean, I think the biggest difference has been, and it was the thing a lot of people questioned during the offseason, is their goaltending. Frederik Andersen, for as poor of a season as he had last year in Toronto, has been spectacular, was named an all-star yesterday, and he's just been really good. Antti Raanta, though he's hurt right now, has been a serviceable backup for sure. And that's been the biggest difference to me is the goaltending has been really, really good. And then you add in the fact that, and I know you all didn't get to see Sebastian Aho last time. That was right before he was diagnosed with COVID, but wasn't feeling well. Sebastian Aho has been amazing. Teuvo Teravainen is always good. And then you have all these young guys, you know, they can throw Svechnikov over the board, Macias. Seth Jarvis has had a really good rookie season that not a lot of people around the league are talking about. But if you look at the number of minutes he's playing and the amount of points he's putting up, he's right up there with really anybody in the NHL as far as production. And he's exciting to watch, too, just electric and fast. And between him and Natchez, they have two wings that can really, really expose any slow-footed defenseman. So just up and down the lineup, they're really strong. And no Jacob Slavin tomorrow because he's now in COVID protocol. As we've all seen, it's just a rotating cast of who's in there at what time. But a lot of depth on defense and guys that can step up. And that's the thing is that, you know, there's no ultra superstar on this team. You know, there's certainly great players, but it's a collective effort and just you know, they can keep coming over the boards with more and more guys that attack and forecheck and just really can dominate play shift after shift after shift and wear teams down.
Well, and they've always found a way to create a lot from the back end. And losing Dougie Hamilton was a big blow for the team. But the way Tony DeAngelo has been productive on the back end, I know there's a lot of baggage with him and a lot of fans are unhappy with him, especially outside of the markets that he's played in. But, you know, as far as how productive he's been on the back end, you know, they still get a lot of offensive push despite not having Dougie Hamilton anymore. And I think that's been one of the other big reasons why they've been able to move forward this year as opposed to taking a step back.
Yeah, Tony's been a really good fit. I mean, he's got a vision that, you know, not a lot of players have out there on the ice. He's done a good job on the first power play unit. I think the biggest difference, and this isn't a knock on Dougie Hamilton, the biggest difference between Tony and Dougie is Tony is an ultra-competitive guy, like you said, sometimes to his detriment. But he's in the fight every night. And, you know, Dougie could lapse in that a little bit here and there. And with Tony, he's, you know, I don't think anybody's putting him up for the Norris Trophy for his defensive play. But at the same time, there's never the thought that he's giving up on a play or that he's not giving his best effort. And he's physical and he's tough and he doesn't, you know, he's a smaller guy and doesn't take anything from anyone. So, yeah, he's been very good. And, you know, he got a misconduct at the end of the game the other night, which, of course, you know, raised eyebrows again. But, you know, he's been well-behaved as far as, you know, what the concerns were. There haven't been any problems. He's gotten along with guys in the locker room. He knew a lot of those guys. There's a ton of former Rangers here. He knew a lot of those guys, and those guys are the ones who spoke up for him when Don Waddell was exploring whether or not this would fit. And so far, it's worked out.
Andrei Svechnikov has turned into quite the young player, still just 21 years old, already making the big bucks with the big contract he signed. How have you seen his game develop, and has he developed into the first star winger we all expected him to already?
You know, it's hard to say. I don't know if he's totally there yet, but that might be a small product of the fact that this is a really good team, and to be on the first line on this team means you're exceptional. And he might not be there yet, but he has all the tools. I mean, from his compete level to his shot to how physical he can be and his size. And then I think what gets overlooked a lot is what a good passer he is. He's really a fantastic passer. He might be a better passer than he is a shooter, which is, you know, he's not out there like Adam Oates and getting 4 assists a game. But the whole thing is that the threat of him shooting often opens up passing lanes, and particularly on the power play, he'll find the seam pass pretty much as well as anyone. And when he gets going, he's pretty tough to stop. There's still some maturing to do, and I don't think it has anything to do with work ethic. It's more not getting frustrated when things don't go his way. But as far as work ethic and determination and all the things you look for, I mean, Rod Brind'Amour loves the guy. That's pretty much all you need to know. When Rod is is behind a guy as much as he's behind behind Andre, you know that he's doing all the right things.
Well, and Corey, one thing that I've also really found fascinating with this Carolina Hurricanes team the past few years is the rolling carousel with the goaltending. Different goaltenders have come in and gone, but they just keep getting consistent goaltending no matter what. I mean, there was a lot of hand-wringing over the Nedeljkovic decision this past year, but then they come in this year, and Freddie Andrus has been terrific. Is it as easy as, hey, it's easy to be a better goalie in front of a good team? Or what else are they doing as an organization that seamlessly bring new goalies in and they keep having success in that environment?
Well, I think what they're always looking for, and, you know, the analytics get talked about a lot and Eric Tulsky gets talked about a lot, and they're always looking at, okay, let's not get caught up in what a goalie did last year. It's kind of like the free agent winger, the guy who enters free agency and he just shot 26% and had 30 goals and everybody's salivating to sign this guy. And, you know, you take a step back and say, well, this guy's not going to shoot 26% again next year. And I think they look at goalies the same way, you know, evaluating goalies is a little bit of witchcraft, right? But I think what they did this year was kind of rely more on, okay, what are the histories of the guys that are available, you know, whether it was their own guys with Nedeljkovic and Mrazek and then also James Reimer, or the guys that were available out there, which, you know, they ended up with Anderson and Raanta. And they know that Anderson and Raanta have a history of being productive goaltenders. So they said, well, we put those guys in a position where they're going to be playing with a team that possesses the puck a lot. That, yes, they do give up chances because they're so aggressive, but you know, they're willing to take that bet with talented goalies and with their talented scorers. And, you know, they don't want to play a 6-5 game, but they're certainly happy going for it all the time because they know that they've got good goalies behind them. And then the goalies also know, you know, these guys aren't going to, you know, last night aside going getting shut out, these guys aren't going to get blanked anytime regularly. So I think that's the biggest thing. And then, you know, Anderson's a spectacular goalie. Out of all five of those goalies I just named, only one of them has gotten a Vezina vote, and it's Frederik Andersen. So his top end, I think, is the highest out of all those guys. And Antti Raanta, when he's healthy, has always been spectacular. So, I think they look a little deeper. But you're right, too, that you put a goalie behind a really good team, and those numbers are going to look better.
Just 79 goals against so far this year for the Carolina Hurricanes. But, you know, as we get closer to the trade deadline, Corey, what is on Don Waddell's wish list, and why is it Jacob Chychrun?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you kind of nailed it. I think it's maybe one more defenseman, whether that's somebody like Chychrun or, you know, someone like that, or somebody with maybe a little bit of a physical edge. Which they tried last year with Yanni Hakanpää with, you know, varied results. But, yeah, I mean, when you think about the Carolina Hurricanes, you think about, all right, they don't make short-sighted deals. They make deals that are going to make sense. When they went out and got Vincent Trocheck and Brady Shea at the deadline a couple years ago, those weren't rentals. Those were guys they thought would fit their system for the long term, and they were both on good deals. So they made the move, and that's what Jacob Chychrun is, right? He's got a fantastic deal for who he is. Now, it's easy to look at his numbers this year and say he's having a down year, but, you know, you look at the guys around him and you say, well, if we, you know, there's not too many guys on that roster that would even play in Carolina. So, yeah, I mean, I certainly think there's a fit there. However, you know, this team doesn't overpay an awful lot as far as making trades. They're pretty steadfast in not wasting assets, and that's why they've built the powerhouse team that they have, and yet still have a really, really good farm system with tons of talented guys ready to come through. So I think, yes, I think they'll certainly be in the conversation on that, but you know, I don't think they're gonna blow Arizona out of the water with an offer that's gonna hurt them in the long term.
Well, one final one here for me, and it has to do with assistant general manager Eric Tulsky, who we kind of mentioned a bit earlier. And in Vancouver, they're searching for a new general manager under the former boss in Carolina, Jim Rutherford. And they have not been linked to Eric Tulsky. I'm not saying that. I'm not going to ask you about that. But what I am going to ask you about is Eric Tulsky has become a very well-known name, at least in the media circles. And I know the stats guys love him, and there's a lot to like about his acumen and how he's worked to this place he's at. Is he a guy who is ready for the ascension in the system in Carolina down the road, or can you see him leaving for a certain situation down the road? Like, do you think he's going to be a guy that stays or could be going down the road in the future to become a GM elsewhere?
Yeah, you know, I know he has a really good relationship with Tom Dundon, and you know, even though that isn't the regime that hired him, I know they believe in him a lot. And you know, I don't know what Don Waddell's long-term plans are, you know, beyond his most recent contract. He's got a lot on his plate between being the team's president, you know, and handling all that comes with that on top of being the GM. So, I mean, you could envision a scenario where Don takes a step back and says, you know, I still want to be part of the hockey operations. And, you know, the way things work here is such a collective process with a lot of people having a say in, you know, from Darren York to Eric Tulsky to Don Waddell to Rod Brind'Amour, you know, all those, you know, everybody's getting a say in the moves that are made. And I could see Don Waddell, you know, maybe stepping aside and, you know, but still being involved in the hockey ops side of things too. But, you know, Eric will certainly, you know, when Eric's contract is up, he will certainly be a hot commodity. There's no doubt about that. The question is, does he want to be that forward-facing guy, or does he like doing what he's doing? And, you know, like I said, this isn't a one-man decision. You know, we heard all the stuff about Ron Hextall from Bobby Clark. You know, how much of that is revisionist history, I don't know. But, you know, the big complaint seemed to be is Ron Hextall was the final word, and that was that. And that's not what things are like in Carolina. So it's just going to come down to what he wants in the end. You know, I think he likes what he does now, and I know he likes it in the area and all that. He's got a son who's still in school and all that. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him down the road. But like I said, he has a good relationship with Tom Dundon, and the team really trusts him. And he's tapped into the way the numbers work, I think, beyond almost anybody in hockey. And, you know, all the stuff we see in the public sphere maybe don't encapsulate the knowledge he has about how analytics factor into hockey. And he's certainly not just a here's the numbers and let's do it guy. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with him down the road. But he's got however bright of a future he wants, I think, in hockey.
Corey, this was a lot of fun. Thanks for your insights.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Enjoy the game tomorrow.
There is Corey Lavalette, Hurricanes writer for North State Journal, Canucks and Carolina Hurricanes, Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time. It's fascinating with Carolina. Like, they are, and you look at their lineup, it's about as deep as there is in the league. But I get the Chychrun talk for Carolina, I do. But also, like, they just don't score as much as the Floridas and the Tampas and the Washingtons of the league. And I wonder if that's something that may end up coming back to bite them again in the playoffs.
And that's going to be the question. The two guys they have, I mean, the one guy who's absolutely unreal is Sebastian Aho. And Svechnikov has a lot of that in his game as well, right? But, you know, I like Teravainen as a player, but he's not really a game breaker, right? And
yep,
That's when you kind of get into trouble. And even the other guys he talks about, like Nick Cash and Trocheck, good players, but again, not game breakers. And they spent a fair bit to get Jesperi Kotkaniemi. I know they love to troll the Montreal Canadiens over that offer sheet, but is that really a smart long-term investment as far as how much money that's going to be invested here and what you gave up to get him? And he's also a guy that's not a game breaker. So,
yeah.
Hey, they have a good hockey team, but can they actually win? And I wonder if they do have enough high-end up front to do that.
It's Jesperi Kotkaniemi, now the most expensive fourth-line left winger after Louis Erickson.
That's tough. I didn't give up a pick to get him.
And they gave up picks to get him with the offer sheet. It's you know, it is. It's an interesting team. I do think they have an incredible high end. They do have a lot of prospects. Seth Jarvis has fit in pretty well. He's already playing first line minutes there with Aho and Teravainen on the right wing. So you're going to see him tomorrow. They are a really good team, but the East is absolutely incredible. And that's just not changing right now. I mean, as we talked about on yesterday's show, pretty much the eight teams in the Eastern Conference are already decided, and it's going to be an absolute slog getting to the Eastern Conference Final and, of course, to the Stanley Cup Final for whoever comes out of the East. As for Svechnikov, you know, Corey just kind of poured cold water on Svech, really, you know, having hit his peak. And, you know, he's only 21 years old, so still some ways to go. But if you were to look back at 2018, does Svechnikov go number one overall?
Oh, no. No. I mean, I love Svechnikov, but I still take Quinn over Svechnikov, right? And I take Brady Tkachuk over Svechnikov. And Rasmus Dahlin, even. I mean, and Rasmus Dahlin, we can have a convo about. He hasn't really emerged that way. I like Svechnikov a lot. I mean, that's not. I'm not dissing him. I'm just. I like Brady Tkachuk better.
I mean, you're kind of dissing him. He went second overall, and now you're saying he's like
going
fourth,
third, maybe fourth. But still, I mean, I'm not picking slugs over him. I'm picking Quinn Hughes over him, right? I'm picking Brady Tkachuk over him. I mean, those are the guys that I'm picking. Like, I like Brady better as a player. I think he's more versatile. He can do more, and. You know, Svechnikov hasn't yet taken that huge leap offensively. If he did, like, you know, if he was really, you know, on pace to score 35 goals, right, or if he did, you know, kind of crack that or have a massive season, maybe I'd sit here and say, okay, it's undeniable. And, you know, he still has a high ceiling, but he's had a career high of 24 goals, right? Hasn't crested over 61 points. And the way Brady Tkachuk plays, he's closer to a point-per-game player this year, right? He scored over 20 goals a couple years in a row. And I don't know. I'm a Brady Tkachuk fan. I think he brings a lot to a hockey team, so I'd probably take him over Svechnikov.
So having played one more season, Rasmus Dahlin is barely ahead of Quinn Hughes in raw points. We know who's been the better player to this point. It's definitely Quinn Hughes, so that's an easy one. As for Brady Tkachuk, I think the thing about Brady Tkachuk that is so hard to, you know, leave out of the conversation is just how rare of a player he is in the National Hockey League. Like, there's other guys that are similar to Svechnikov who can score really well and do those types of things. There's not many guys, maybe not any other player that has the ceiling and the power forward game that Brady Tkachuk seems to have.
And not only is it that, it's the fact that he can play down the middle for you, right?
Yeah.
And that does separate. It's one thing to be a power winger that can do a bit of everything. You see guys like that around the league get paid, and there's a reason to do. I mean, Tom Wilson's a example of that with the Washington Capitals. And Brady's, you know, not quite as abrasive as Tom Wilson is, but he's a better all-around player, and he can play down the middle, and he can play every single situation for you, right? He's a rare breed, and every time I watch Brady Tkachuk play, I'm more and more impressed by him. And I just, I can't wait to watch him play in the postseason one day, right? Because he's going to be a guy that's going to be an absolute force. He's a tremendous hockey player, and I do believe, and I've said this a lot, like, hey, numbers are great, but give me more than numbers. Be a great two-way guy, and that is what Brady Tkachuk can also be. So, yeah, he's a real rare breed, Dan. Not many guys like him around the National Hockey League.
That's a quick look back at the 2018 draft. Canucks and Carolina Hurricanes tomorrow. Then they get the Washington Capitals on Sunday. Joe Beninati is going to join us to break down the Capitals side of things, where they're at right now, and just how good is Alex Ovechkin in yet another standout season at how old is he now? We'll get Joe on next. Canuck Central. Canuck Central on a Mailbag Friday. Getting a lot of questions coming in I want to remind our podcast listeners, you can send in questions at any point during the week. We try to collect them all and respond to as many as we can every single Friday at DanRicho underscore and at Satyar Shah. You can DM us if you like, but getting a ton of questions, and we'll answer your questions in the mailbag coming up in hour three of today's show. Always appreciate you listening, however you are listening, live, on stream, on radio, or on demand with the podcast. Please subscribe and leave a review. We do appreciate it. Canucks, big weekend. Carolina on Saturday, and then the Washington Capitals on Sunday, Sat. There's no breaks on this road trip for the Vancouver Canucks. It's really brutal.
Not only is it a tough road trip, it also got made a bit tougher because the Carolina Hurricanes got slapped upside the head the other night, so they're going to be extra motivated, right? And
Rod Brindamore's eating some souls after that game, you know?
So you know they're going to come out firing, right? Now, Slavin's not playing, so that does help the Canucks out a bit on the back end, but we know that team has a lot of help too. And then on Sunday, oh yeah, you're facing maybe the best forward of all time in Alex Ovechkin. So yeah, doesn't get much easier.
Let's bring in our next guest to preview the Washington side of it. It's Joe Beninati, play-by-play voice for the Washington Capitals. Thanks for this, Joe. How are you?
Dan and Sat, I'm doing great. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Can you explain Alex Ovechkin's season for us? Like, I know he's really good, but like, he shouldn't be this good at his age.
Pretty amazing. I'm not going to say that he went to an entirely different training regimen in the off season, but whatever he did in the off season with his personal trainer seemed to have such a great effect at the outset of the year. And I think even until now, you know, we're almost pushing February, and his skating legs have been really good, especially for someone who's on the 36 years of age and on 17 seasons as an NHL goal scorer. Whatever it is that he's doing seemed to have a great effect at the outset. Mm-hmm. He's playing the game wiser, guys, if that makes any sense. He's playing a smarter game. He's in the right place at the right time much more now than he was earlier in his career. And I think that's probably the natural evolution of any player. They're going to wisen up over time. But it sure seems like he's taken some things to heart, whether it be his own introspection or whatever coaches may have had for him as far as learning to be in the right spot positionally, and that's helped his overall offensive game. Is he as fast as he was when we first saw him 17 years ago and he was scoring 65 goals? And no, he's not that fast anymore, but his burst is still very, very good, and his shot is out of this world. So the numbers keep climbing, and maybe this year we're seeing a little bit more playmaking than ever before, but I always think he was underrated from a passing standpoint.
He's been a spectacular player in so many different ways, and you're right about his playmaking and his vision as well. And, you know, one thing I always find interesting in this is we always look for one answer, right? And it's always more complex for a player to be as great as he is. But one of the things that never seems to go away is his enthusiasm for the game and the love for the game. And I know everybody loves the game, but it seems like he hasn't lost in a single bit of enthusiasm for the game of hockey. And that's probably a big reason why it drives him so much in addition to wanting to be great, doesn't it?
From the first day I ever met him, we were inside of the arena, which is now Capital One Arena, and there was a subfloor down. There was no ice. But the boards that were down, the subfloor that was down that would be there, that would prevent, you know, the basketball court from connecting to the ice, that was down. And the boards, the hockey boards were up. And Alex, you could literally feel the heart beating out of his chest. Can I go and skate? Can I go and skate? I'm like, Alex, there's no ice down there. That love for the game has never waned. And, you know, we always see the tremendous celebrations he gives when he scores. But 9 times out of 10, I think he's more excited when you guys score, when the other players on his team score, his teammates, his line mates. His reactions are just as lovable for that reaction as it's been for him when we first saw him jumping up into the glass 17 years ago. That has never waned, and he's just becomes like a little kid again when he gets back out on the ice.
You know, we've felt it for years with the Sedins and the impact they've had on hockey in this market and in the community. What has Alex Ovechkin meant to hockey in Washington?
Fantastic from the grassroots level, from the amount of boys and girls who are playing in this area to the high school impact that we're seeing more and more players have an opportunity to impress Division I, high caliber, high-ranking U.S. college teams are taking more and more players from the Maryland, Virginia area. And to see someone like Joe Snively just about a month or so ago, who grew up in Herndon, Virginia, and who went to Yale, an undersized forward, scrappy, but who watched Alex Ovechkin when he was growing up and fell in love with the game because of Alex and his Capitals teammates. More and more, you're seeing it from this area, and it's directly related to number eight. There's no doubt in my mind about that, and I think it's great to see, especially at the collegiate level, so many more high-ranking, powerful Division I schools taking a peek at more and more Maryland and Virginia junior B-level type squads or midget major type players trying to incorporate those players into their lineup. It all can be traced back to the grade eight.
You know, one player that's come back from injury, too, and I think has been one of the more underrated players throughout his career is Nicklas Backstrom. And, you know, it seems like he has been consistent year in and year out. When he's healthy and playing for this team, how big of a difference does he make? And how underrated do you think he still is around the league for how good he is?
Yeah, underrated for sure. I would say underappreciated, not by those in the know. You know, the men who play in the NHL, the men who coach in the NHL, they appreciate what Nicklas Backstrom has done for so long. His vision for the game is incredible. And I'll use a football analogy. He's not a burner. He's not a guy who takes the top off of a defense on a football field. But he manages to make the rest of the game play at the level that he's and the speed that he's comfortable with. And he's done that for as long as we've seen him. His sight lines, his touch, his passing game is extraordinary. He never gets enough credit for what coaches refer to as that 200-foot game, the ability to play both offense and defense. There were times, and there still are times, where Nicklas gets the most difficult assignment. You know, there, it's interesting to see which way, you know, Peter Laviolette will go. If it's a Connor McDavid matchup, who gets it? Is it Backstrom? Is it Kuznetsov? Is it Dowd? Is it Eller? He's got four pretty good ones to choose from there. But you would think that, I'll shy away from the two really offensive-minded guys, Kuznetsov and Backstrom. Let's not put them against a McDavid or a Matthews. But a lot of the times he does. And Nicklas has found a way to be in the right spots positionally on defense to help eliminate some of those top scoring threats. He's just an all-around terrific player, and as good as he is on the ice, guys, if you get to know him off of it, he's a fantastic person.
A bit of a break this week for the Capitals, but they've been having to stew on a four-game losing streak. They get the Islanders Saturday, and then they'll welcome the Canucks into Washington on Sunday. What is it with this team? The defensive breakdowns, is this something that is worrisome for the Capitals right now?
Absolutely, Dan and Satin. And it's been, you know, you point to the four-game winless stretch. In my mind, it's been longer than that. I mean, it goes back to pre-Christmas time, right around when the NHL extended the holiday break. I don't think Washington has been playing nearly as well. In the first 15, 20, 25 games of the season, they were buttoned up defensively. And nobody wants to use COVID as an excuse. I'm not saying that this is the reason, but for the first 20-odd games, Peter Laviolette, Kevin McCarthy, his assistant coach who's responsible for defense, they could go with the same six every night. They never adjusted their defensive pairings. In the last few weeks, they've had to, whether it be due to injury or illness, protocol, etc. All of a sudden, I think that's catching up to them from a defensive zone coverage standpoint. The goaltending has been erratic. There have been times when Samsonov and Vanecek definitely looked the part. There are other times where they've been susceptible to giving up a few of those leaky, weaky type goals that can really submarine your efforts. And then I'm not taking the forwards off the hook either. Early in the season, first couple of months, collectively that five-man unit was doing really, really well. Washington was top five scoring, top five goals against average. All of a sudden, that's slipped. And I can't find an excuse for that just yet. I'm not going to say it's all about the players who've been in and out of the protocol, but from what I gather and from what I'm told, it takes a while for the players to get back up to speed. I haven't seen it since before Christmas, and that's the reason why all of a sudden now Rangers, Carolina, Pittsburgh right there with them in the Metro Division.
You know, that division is quite the division this year, too, and there's a lot of strong teams. And, you know, the thing with Washington that I was kind of wondering about as well, if there's one area that this team might be looking to shore up, what would that be, do you think, if they really want to contend for that Stanley Cup this year?
It's the strangest thing because I know General Manager Brian McClellan wants to show faith in the goalies. And Samsonov and Vanecek are one of the youngest, by average age, youngest tandems in the league. And they're both trying to establish themselves as number ones. Samsonov is the guy with the pedigree. He's the first-round pick. He's the guy with the super high ceiling. He's also the guy that they gave a sort of one-year, you-got-to-show-me, Ilya-type contract. This is a prove-it season for Samsonov. And his one-loss record looks fantastic at 13-3-3. I understand that. But the goals against average numbers, the save percentage numbers, aren't necessarily anything brilliant. All of a sudden, Samsonov's given up three or more goals in, I think it's 9 of his last 12 starts. He has the ability to make these jaw-dropping saves, and at the other times, he's technically unsound. And I know that Scott Murray, the goalie coach for the Caps, has been spending a lot of time with Ilya. He's the one that they want to be the number one. Vanecek is maybe the steadier of the two, and might have more faith from the coaching staff than the two, but what I'm trying to get around saying is I don't think they're going to go out and look for a goalie right now, but it might be the area that they feel like they need to shore up. With all the COVID protocol that's gone on, all the guys that have gone in and out of the lineup, all of a sudden the Caps have been able to look pretty deep into their American League system and see what their top prospects from the Hershey Bears can deliver. I'm speaking about Leason and Protas and McMichael. They've seen that. I think they feel comfortable with their forward base, especially when they're at full health. Martin Ferravari's probably the best rookie they've had all season. He's been wonderful this year. Didn't play last season because they had Zdeno Chara in that spot, but that gave Martin another year at the American Hockey League level. He's been a really nice compliment for John Carlson. I think they feel fine with respect to forwards and D. If they're going to peek around, maybe it is for a veteran goalie just to come in and sort of hold the hands of these two younger guys. But they want desperately for those two guys to emerge.
Joe, really appreciate your time and your insights. Thanks for this today.
Guys, my pleasure. Anytime.
There is Joe Beninati, play-by-play voice for the Washington Capitals. So a Capitals team that's, as you heard from Joe there, it's been reeling, you know, and we look at this weekend and sat, and we talked about it. We know Bruce Boudreau mentioned it. We'd like to be 500 on this trip. We always knew it was going to be a tall task given, you know, the long break. And then of course the opponents that you had coming up on this trip. But that feels like a game you would want to have. I mean, how much of a chance do we give the Canucks to win not just one, but maybe two games this weekend? I believe Sat's on mute, so we will.
You are correct. Sorted. You are there correct, it is. Dan. You
the
are
one
correct,
time Dan. A show.
The one time of show. See, it was almost 6 o'clock, so it went almost 2 hours. But you know what? Absolutely, of course they have a chance, right? If they play the same way they played against Tampa and against Florida and just capitalize on opportunities a bit better, they can win both games. Now, do I think they'll win both games? It's a tall task, right? And if you wanted to piece together a way for this team to be 500, you kind of wanted to get something out of those first two games, even a single point. Because if you got a single point, then all you got to do is win two of your final three games, right? And if you win two of your final three, you feel pretty good about it. Now you're in a position, if you want to go 500, you kind of need results in every single game remaining. You got to win two, and you got to get a point out of one of those games as well. It's asking a lot to get, three wins here, perhaps, against the three opponents coming up. Three games of four nights as well to end a road trip. That's not an easy ask. But if you can somehow get 3 out of 4 points this weekend, I think that changes the conversation dramatically heading into that game against the Nashville Predators on Tuesday.
you want to see them continue to play well, but you also want to see them get some results out of playing well eventually. You know, I think if they do play like they did last night against Tampa, they'd win a lot of those games. But you know, something we talked about on the post-game show last night, Tampa, maybe they didn't create a ton of shots, but it just seemed like they were more about quality than quantity. And I think the Canucks right now, they're not finding as many quality chances as you'd like to see them get. And I guess that, you know, kind of speaks to the overall offensive struggles they've had this season, but they still had some big chances last night. You know, Bo Horvat all alone, staring right down the face of Vasilevsky. Couple of partial breaks for Elias Pettersson. Brock Besser had the chance at the end of the third with the goalie pulled, where Pettersson found him in the slot area and he missed the net. You know, they did create some big chances, probably not enough. You know, realistically, you'd always like to create more, but It's more about finishing those and also turning more of your quantity into quality, I think.
You know, I do believe that's something they were doing pretty well earlier on when Boudreau took over, because we talked so much about how this Canucks team was playing before Boudreau. They were generating a lot of shots and they were outshooting the opponent, right? And they were possessing the puck a lot, but they weren't turning that into quality scoring chances. And they weren't able to do it as effectively against the Florida and against Tampa. But still, I thought they still generated more than they would have for playing the way they did previously. And I think one thing you also have to keep in mind against those two opponents, Tampa specifically, Tampa's a very hard team to generate scoring chances against. A bit easier against Florida, but even them, they're hard to generate against, right? So that's a tough barometer. Carolina is interesting, right? Because the way they play, they essentially hold on to the puck the whole time. But they do give you a little bit as well. So I do think there will be some more opportunities there for that Canucks team. And Washington, as good as they've been, they generate. You can also get on them as well. So I do think if you're looking at transitioning some of those looks into more quality chances, it will be a bit easier against opponents coming up on the weekend. Not a lot easier, but a bit easier.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy against these two. Which game do you use Demko in? Do you play him tomorrow against Carolina?
I think you play him tomorrow, yeah. I think you play him tomorrow, get him three games in here now. He's had some rest in between, worked on his game. He'll be motivated. I think you go with him, and then you throw Halak out there against the Washington Capitals. That's the way I would go about it. Now, could I see Boudreau go the other way? I could, but, you know, both those teams are pretty tough. I don't know if you can really overthink it or make a wrong decision in this point. You got to play one against both. I would just rather go Demko tomorrow.
Yeah, and it's the game that you have theoretically the better chance in. But, you know, one good thing about the schedule too, now Washington's been off since Monday when they lost 7-3 to the Boston Bruins, but they do play tomorrow against the New York Islanders. So they will also be on the second half of a back-to-back. And also traveling, because they are playing in New York against the Islanders tomorrow, and then they'll be traveling home to play the Canucks on Sunday. So a little bit of a better schedule situation than just a regular back-to-back where the home team is waiting for you to come in and just about to absolutely feast on you. And you know, I think that's a good thing for the Canucks. Obviously, that should help them. Kyle Burrows is likely to get in on Sunday, as Boudreau mentioned that today as well. Wants to get his extra defenseman a little bit extra time and maybe give one of the other defensemen a little bit of a break. Quinn Hughes did not practice today as they try to rest him with all the minutes he's been playing. And Hughes just seems like the player that's he's stirring everything for the Canucks right now. It feels like there's a lot on Quinn Hughes' shoulders, not only defensively, but with the team struggling offensively. He seems like the guy that's most likely to get the offense going right now. And that's just feels like there's a lot of pressure on Quinn to get this team going in the right direction.
He's relishing it though, right? Because he's excelling in that role. He's not complaining about it. He's playing big minutes. He's been in the black all season as far as his differentials go, and you know, even the raw totals with goals for and against when he's on the ice, something he wanted to improve based on how bad he was this past the last year when it came to having a lot of goals scored while he was on the ice. That's changed. But this is what players like him should want. This is what players like him should relish, that your team is leaning on you in a massive way. They need you every night. They need you to play 25, 26 minutes a game. You got to get thrown out on the PK as well. You got to produce offensively. That's what a franchise defenseman gets leaned on to do, right? And hey, you want to have a blue line where you don't rely on even the best defenseman to do as much as Quinn is doing. But the fact that he's capable of doing it is exactly why he's a franchise caliber player. It's something this organization has not had in the past, especially not a player who's as young as Quinn Hughes is, right? And this is what these players do. They handle these things. They can put it on their shoulders and move forward. And as far as trying to test it out and see what Quinn Hughes is capable of, we can say he needs some help. But how reassuring is it that after the team committed to him to a six-year contract worth $7.85 million per season, after a lot of fans and some media were doubting what he might turn out to be long term, that he's handling that type of role this year and he's excelling in it. Yeah, you worry about wear and tear, you worry about injuries, but as far as just purely being handle the role in the minutes, he is crushing it this season.
It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. We are Canucks Central. This has been your weekend preview. Canucks up against Washington and Carolina through the weekend. They'll get Nashville on Tuesday, before finally returning home to Rogers Arena towards the end of next week. Coming up, Chris Faber will be joining us of the Canucks warm-up here on Sportsnet 650 every weekend, and of course Canucks Conversation and Canucks Army. He's also a producer here at Sportsnet 650. There is nothing Chris Faber does not do, and he will join us in hour number three. Plus, the mailbag, your questions for us on Sportsnet 650.